Hi, everyone. Before we get started with the episode, I want to take a moment to address the United States Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade on June 24th. This decision, which stripped away the right to a safe and legal abortion, also stripped away a woman's right to choose what is best for themselves, anyone with a uterus, their right to have autonomy over their own body and to make the decisions that are best for themselves and their lives. Restricting access to comprehensive reproductive care, including abortion, threatens the health and independence of all people, which we have already seen with abortion bans and restrictions in countries like Poland and Malta. This decision has dire consequences, and it could have, in fact, I would say that it will have harsh repercussions for other landmark decisions within the United States, including marriage equality. I encourage all of you, American or otherwise, to learn more about what you can do to help, whether you need access to safe reproductive medical health care, or you want to help provide it, you want to help with funds or anything else, other resources that you wanted to provide to people who need access to reproductive health care. Podcasters have come together to provide an excellent resource. You can visit podvoices.help for details. That's podvoices.help. As a woman, a mother of daughters, and a member of the LGBTQ community, I urge you to speak up. Please take care of yourself. Please help us spread the word. We must stand together now. We must be loud because we are either going to win this together or lose it together. Again, visit podvoices.help to learn more. Hi, everybody. Heather Vickery here, and thanks so much for tuning in to the Brave Files podcast. As you may or may not know, the Brave Files is taking a summer break. We will be off the months of July and August, and we are bringing you some of our most treasured favorite episodes from the past 4.5 years. So we're replaying one of those past episodes today. I hope you enjoy it. Share it with everyone you know. And we will be back with brand new content in September. Have a great summer, everyone.
Empathy. Brave. Authentic.
You're listening to The Brave Files, where we share stories from people who've stepped out of fear and into bravery in every possible way. What we know for sure is that when we choose bravely on purpose, we choose bigger, we win bigger, and it's contagious. It's our hope that these stories connect with you and encourage you to embrace bravery in every possible way, day after day. Together, we can build a movement that enriches both our lives and our communities. The Brave Files is brought to you by Vickery & Co., a success and leadership coaching firm dedicated to helping you build a life and a business that you are absolutely in love with. Vickery & Co. offers group programs, membership communities, one-on-one coaching, VIP days, corporate trainings, workshops, keynote speaking, and so much more. Visit vickeryandco.com to get all the details. Hey, everybody. Happy Thursday. This is Heather Vickery. Welcome to the Brave Files podcast. So today's guest is a man named Tom Mitchell. And I first learned about Tom from a really great blog called Love What Matters. If you don't know it, find the links in the show note and go and check it out. The blog never ceases to bring me to tears or put a pretty smile on my face. In this piece, Tom shares the devastating story of his daughter's battle with cancer. But the story focuses mostly on their ability to be brave in an unfathomable situation. Clearly, the brave topic connected with me right away before I even realized what I was reading. And then it sort of took my breath away. I have learned since I invited Tom to be on the show that he has done some really incredible work for children and their families fighting childhood cancer with his organization called stillbrave.org. And I'm really, really honored. Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Heather. Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
So, all right. Your story is, I'm literally shaking talking to you because it's my worst nightmare. It's so powerful. Can you tell us a little bit about your daughter, Shayla, and this journey that you went on together?
Well, sure. I'll give you the sort of the condensed version of the story that Love What Matters posted on their site. So my daughter Shayla called me one day and she said she wasn't feeling good, thought maybe she had a sinus infection. So I said, sure, I'll pick you up after school. We'll go to the doctor's, maybe grab some dinner afterwards. Well, it turns out that her sinus infection was a little bit more than that. She actually had a huge cancerous tumor inside her chest that was taking up 2/3 of the room and had caused one of her lungs to collapse.
Oh my goodness.
So we didn't know at the time what was going on, but we found out rather rapidly that we're kind of in a really tough, serious situation. You know, what we thought was was the sinus infection wound up being something much more serious. So we were immediately rushed to the emergency room and we began a long, arduous journey throughout childhood cancer treatment protocols, chemotherapies, radiations. There were a great deal of complications. You know, I heard you say that it's your worst fear. I think it's every parent's worst fear. But one of the most interesting things that I've discovered that I can talk about this far removed from it is while it was one of my biggest fears, and I think it still frightens me that it could happen to another one of my children. But the reality for me was that it didn't look like I thought it would. And it didn't feel like I thought it would. It wound up being something much different, which was a big epiphany. I don't know if epiphany is the right word, but it was a big shock to me because it was nothing like I could have imagined. It wasn't, it's hard to explain. It's hard to really put it into words, but it wasn't as frightening as I thought it was going
to
be.
Interesting. What do you attribute that to? Was it, my instinct is that because that parent gene kicks in and you say, well, I have to stay strong. I have to stay brave. I have to protect my child. I just have to do this thing. What made it not as frightening?
What happened was because of the situation, because of the intensity and the gravity and the seriousness of the situation, what it did for both me and my daughter is it stripped away all the things that we did not need. Yeah. The greed, selfishness, you know, the self-serving, self-righteous, all the character defects that humans possess that we just don't really need. It stripped that away from us and it took us down to our most raw, authentic selves. And she and I, because I was a single dad and we were mostly alone through this, she and I were put in a position where we were experiencing life on life's terms at life's most cruelest.
Yeah.
But we had each other and there was beauty there.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain, but there was beauty there because we got rid of everything that we didn't need. As yeah. human beings, we didn't need all of that stuff. And all of a sudden we were in this place where, you know, please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. It was the worst experience of my life.
I understand. Yeah. I hear what you're saying.
But I was able to see beauty even when it wasn't pretty.
I love that. And one can assume that Shayla did as well. She had, you are so strong. The story that you share, How did you talk with Shayla about being brave through this? Because this is the Brave Files podcast, and this is probably the one episode where that's actually a word we're using a lot. Typically, we talk about bravery in a way that people don't realize they're necessarily being brave, but this was a big part of your journey with Shayla.
Oh, for sure. And it definitely wasn't. It was interesting, too, because I learned a lot about the word brave and what bravery was. And in the story that I relayed to Love What Matters, when we went to the hospital that night and the doctors told me the situation, you know, they said to me, do you want to tell her that she has cancer or do you want us to tell her? Well, naturally, well, maybe not naturally, but I said, no, I want to be the one to tell her. I think it's my responsibility to tell her this, but I wasn't sure how to have that conversation with her. So I walked out of the hospital and I wanted to just catch my breath and I went for a walk and I found myself at a shopping mall around the corner from the hospital. And I was just, you know, aimlessly walking around thinking about a variety of different things and how I might approach this conversation. And I stumbled into a Native American art store, jewelry store. And they had a lot of arts and crafts and stuff that Native American Indians had made. And I purchased two sterling silver feather bracelets. One was a a small feminine version of a feather, and the other one was a much larger sort of male version that I selected for myself. And so I started thinking about the word brave, and I, you know, I knew that understanding of what that word meant actually at the time, but I thought it was important to convey to her the importance of being brave. I thought that if we could be brave, we could get through this.
And what did that brave mean though?
So at the time that, you know, the brave meant to me at that time, and my definition has evolved quite a bit, and it means something vastly different to me today. But at that time, it meant being strong and not being afraid, you know, facing your demons with courage and valor and, you know, and strength and determination. I think it meant something like that to me at the time. That's a sort of the definition that I had always believed it to be.
Right.
I found out later that I was very, very wrong about that. But I went into the hospital with those bracelets and I talked to her about feathers and being blown together like feathers in the wind. And we talked about a lot of things, and then eventually the conversation lent itself to cancer and being brave. And so I promised her, you know, I told her that she had cancer. We had that conversation. I promised her that as long as she stayed brave, so would I. And I promised her as well that I would wear that bracelet until she was cancer free. And the third promise I made her was that I would stay with her every night in the hospital that she had to stay. I would stay inpatient with her. And so in spite of the way things turned out, I have kept all of those promises to this day. I still wear that bracelet.
Yeah.
You know, she never became cancer free, but I promised her that I would wear it until she did.
And so you don't take it off.
I don't take it off. I keep my promises. And, you know, I stayed brave and I'm still brave because of her. And I did stay every night in the hospital with her. It was hundreds and hundreds of nights that we wound up staying in the hospital. You know, I kept those three promises to her. But as time went on, you know, I discovered that brave was a little different. I heard this quote one time, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who to attribute it to, but the quote said, "Can a man still be brave when he is afraid?" And then he says, "That's the only time he can be brave."
Yeah.
And so it dawned on me, you know, that I wasn't strong and I wasn't full of valor and hero, all that stuff. It wasn't that. I was just afraid. And I was scared, and I needed to do the right thing to take care of my daughter in that situation. And so the word took on a different meaning for me. And then if you've read the story, you'll hear, you know, I can tell you now how Still Brave, the name of my foundation, came to be, and how I got a whole new interpretation of what that word meant.
Yeah. Well, so you have other children.
I do.
How was that, right? Balancing being this full-time caregiver for Shayla staying in the hospital, and your other children must have been frightened as well. And what was that process like?
So that was one of the most heart-wrenching experiences of my life, because what would happen is, so when Shayla was diagnosed, my other children lived with my ex-wife. Shayla came to live with me. We stayed in an apartment together, but Shayla was always what's called neutropenic. Like, she was always immunocompromised. Mm. So my children were young. So my children couldn't really come over much unless Shayla was, you know, doing really well with her blood counts and her levels, because they could make her sick. And if she got sick, she'd have to immediately be rushed to the hospital. She could die because she had no way to fight off. Her immune system was so compromised. She had no way to fight off sometimes even a simple cold without having to be hospitalized. So it became a very difficult time in my life because I was separated from my other children a great deal of the time, and they were separated from us. You know, several of them, it's not like I have 50 kids, but there were three of them were very, very young at the time. So they have they don't really have much of a remembrance or understanding, and it was a little easier for them. My two older children really struggled with it. And really had a tough time with being separated from us like that. My 5-year-old at the time had a conversation with me, and it broke my heart. And she says, and I don't understand really what her thinking was, but she said, "I know why you love Shayla more than me." And I said, but I don't love Shayla more than you. Why do you think that? She goes, "Well, you take care of her, and she lives with you, and she must be your real daughter." And I know. So it broke my heart. But one of the things that my foundation, when I started Still Brave, Childhood Cancer Foundation, one of the things that I was very animate about is that we were going to have what, and we do have it, it's called an All-Star Sibling Program.
What
we do is we put on events and activities, and we celebrate the brothers and sisters of children with cancer whose lives are almost always overshadowed by their siblings' diagnoses. So the answer to your question is it was a very, very difficult, heart-wrenching time, but I learned so much that I was able to transfer that, you know, into the work that I do today in a very positive way. And so, again, I see beauty in something that didn't start out very pretty. I was able to source some beauty from that and to apply that. I can tell you on another note, though, my now oldest daughter, Shannon, is a third year nursing student at University of Mary Washington. She intends to be a pediatric oncology nurse. She's crushing it. She's got a 3.8 grade point average. She's so compassionate and so empathetic and this wonderful person. She speaks at events and rallies, and she's been to Capitol Hill, and I mean, she spoke at the White House. She's just like, she is so plugged in as a direct result. She came out of it in a very positive, driven, purposeful way, the same way that I did. One of my other children, not so much. Like, she was close, very, very close to Shayla. And Shayla's death hit her hard. Yeah. And, you know, we had to look into some grief therapy for her, some grief camps. And today she doesn't want anything to do with childhood cancer. She doesn't show up for any of the events. And that's just how
process.
And I don't begrudge her that at all. Different for everybody. And it's different for parents. You know, there are many parents who lose children with cancer and they go on to start foundations or they become very involved in advocacy or activism. And there are other parents who just want to forget about it all and don't want to see it again, you know, regardless of the outcome, whether the child survives or not, you know, everybody takes sort of a different approach. And I don't begrudge anybody how they grieve or how they process and handle it, but it is all very vastly different. But I learned a lot. I guess the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. And then we were able to apply that to the programs that we run today. And we do some really cool stuff for the siblings. And what's funny is we make it so, you know, this is not an event for children with cancer. This is an event for brothers and sisters. But inevitably, almost always, the brothers and sisters will invite their sibling. It's a beautiful thing to see.
I love that. Yeah. Well, so tell us a little bit about, first of all, how long ago did you lose Shayla?
So Shayla passed away in 2009. It's hard as it is to believe, this January is going to mark 10 years.
Wow.
And, you know, it seems like just yesterday, a lot of the times, but it does seem like 1,000 lifetimes ago as well. It's a very strange place to be.
I can't imagine.
The days go really slow, but you probably heard this saying.
But the years go really fast.
Years go so fast, you know, just so fast. Yeah. So, January 28th will be 10 years.
So what transpired for you from losing her to starting stillbrave.org? What was that about? Yeah.
Okay. So the story is kind of an interesting one. So I'm a very proud man. I've always owned my own businesses. I've always worked for myself. I've earned a great deal of money, you know, throughout my lifetime. But when Shayla got sick, I was unable to work. I was a single dad and her care required 24-hour attention. So I was unable to work. So there were times where I didn't have gas money to get her to her life-saving chemotherapy appointments. We were getting food from a food bank. I didn't know how I was going to pay rent. I didn't know how I was going to pay my electric bill. I had no idea how I was going to do things. I was devastated by what was happening. And back then, there weren't a lot of foundations out there offering assistance. Right. There are many more today than there were back then. But there was one foundation, that helped me out, and they were called Growing Hope. And they were an amazing foundation run by this amazing woman, and they helped us. I think they gave us $1,600, and they helped us pay rent 1 month, and we were able to apply some of that money, get some gas cards, things like that. But I felt so bad about taking their money, and I felt so guilty about needing charity and needing help that I wanted to devise a way to pay them back. So when I was a kid, I used to be a boxer. I used to go to local Boys and Girls Club, and you know, I could throw a straight punch. So I went back to boxing during Shayla's treatment as just therapy for me. I would go in and I'd punch the bag and work out for an hour and go home and take care of her. Well, I met a professional boxer through my gym, and he wound up coming to visit Shayla in the hospital. A very famous boxer named Jimmy Lang. He was on the show The Contender with Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, just a great guy. One thing led to another, and next thing you know, we're having a conversation about me becoming a professional boxer, fighting on his card in front of 10,000 people. And I said, okay, I'll do it, but only if we can raise money so I can pay Growing Hope back for the money that they lent me,
That's really cool.
So yeah. I wound up, it's a long story. Well, it's really not a long story. I got knocked out in the second round, but I raised almost $20,000.
Wow.
And I paid back Growing Hope, the $1,600 plus interest. I mean, I've gotten my ass whipped for free before. So 20 grand, pretty good deal. So at that fight, Shayla walked me to the ring.
Oh, wow.
And it was a big deal. We were on the news, and here in the DC area, it was a pretty big story. And then a couple of months later, Shayla lost her battle. And it was shortly after then that after a grieving period, I decided that I wanted to dedicate the rest of my life to helping children with cancer and their families. I had made her several promises, and we had some very candid, she was older, she was 16. So we had several very candid conversations about what my life might look like after she died, once we were home on hospice and we sort of knew where we were going. And she made me promise that I would help other families that were in similar situations. And we had this joke. I mean, so this will give you an idea of the type of kid she was, but she's like, if you don't, I'm totally going to haunt you.
I love that.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, but no haunting at night because that'll scare me too much. Like, just daytime haunting. But fortunately, she hasn't haunted me, so I guess I'm doing okay. But we started the foundation. Initially, we were just going to my idea. I had a full-time job at the time, and you know, I mean, I never thought that it would take off. I had no idea. So my initial idea was just to raise a little bit of money here and there so that I could offer gas cards and grocery cards to families who were struggling. But one of the most amazing things happened is that I found out through my visits of dropping off these gas cards and these grocery cards that I have, I don't want to call it a gift because I don't like that word, but I have a knack with kids. Kids just dig me. And I don't know why that is. I mean, if you looked at me, you probably could tell I'm covered in tattoos.
I was going to say you're known as Tattoo Tom, right?
Right. They call me Tattoo Tom. I'm covered in tattoos from head to toe. I definitely don't look like your average childhood cancer advocate. I look like a punk rocker or a biker or something like that. But I have a rapport with kids that's uncanny. And I stumbled on it by accident. I've always gotten along well with children.
And you have had six children, right?
Yes, that's correct.
I was like doing the math in my head. I'm like, yeah, that's six.
So, I mean, at least I'm tolerant of kids. But what I discovered was I would go in and 10 years down the road, I'm able to sort of connect the dots and I'm able to look at some of the reasons why it is. But I was able to go into these hospital rooms and it happened by sheer serendipity or happenstance, but I would leave and I'd get an email or a text from the mom or the dad. And they were like, Tom, we don't know how to thank you, you know. Jimmy was inconsolable for days and you showed up and he's smiling and he's laughing. What did you do? How did you do it? And I was like, well, but I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what I did. And I still don't know. But you know what I do is I show up and I wing it. And I keep showing up and I keep winging it. And it seems to work. And kids really like me. And I've built these amazing, wonderful relationships with these kids at a time where a lot of people, particularly even family members, are pushing away from it because they're so afraid of outcomes. You know, I run into it, I call it the trenches. I run into the trenches, you know, full speed. And I treat these kids the same way that I would treat you. I speak to them the same way and in a very authentic and real way. And so it turns out because of that sort of knack that I have with the kids, my reputation started building and I was getting invited to spend more and more time with the families. And I was offering the benefit of my experience in a very, again, real and authentic way. I don't water anything down. I'm very, I wasn't built for subtle. But
I can appreciate that.
And parents with children with cancer can appreciate that too.
Yeah.
We started doing really well and we started getting a lot of corporate interest. I put on some really ridiculous fundraisers. I run 200-mile ultra marathons up volcanoes to raise money. Yeah.
Do you throw any parties? I'll come to DC for a party, but I'm not running up a mountain.
So we have a party December 8th. We put on a rock concert. We call it Rock and Renegade. We put it on every year. This will be our fifth one. And I sing in a punk rock band, and we bring other musicians in. We have a silent auction, but we do have a great party, and it's a fun opportunity. We have cosplay characters that show up. Deadpool's the Master of Ceremonies this year.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
But it's a great opportunity for families who just want to come out. Not everybody is built for golf tournaments and galas. Some people want to take a shot at tequila and shake their ass.
Yeah.
We make that happen for them. Some parents want to come out and cut loose, and we make that happen for them. So again, we do things. We call ourselves Renegades, Still Brave Renegades. That's been our shtick from the beginning, because there's a song by a band called Rage Against the Machine. And one of the lines of the songs is, "Renegades are people with their own philosophies. We change the course of history. Everyday people like you and me." And so we've dubbed ourselves Renegades, and we do things different than other people. We raise money differently. I'm a skydiver, and I'm about to put a big skydiving fundraiser together that we're hoping will take off on a national level. So I was trying to think outside of the box.
So cool.
And attach ourselves to a different way of approaching advocacy and activism, so that we can hopefully attract a different demographic of people that sometimes are falling through. People come out and see my punk rock shows and come out and support us, these ridiculous races, these boxing matches, and they're beautiful people who want to support and they want to help, and we provide that opportunity for them in ways that they can get down with.
That's so cool.
So it's been cool.
So I have a question though. So your organization and you do the fundraising, you help with the gas cards, you make sure they can pay the bills and things like that. And then also you're going in and you're sitting with these kids and you're shooting straight with them. In fact, we had this interview scheduled a couple of weeks ago, and you messaged me and said one of your Still Brave kids needed you to be in the hospital with him.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. I'll just be frank. I'm going to hold kids' hands when they die. I get very plugged in with the families. I have dinner at their house. Years later, I'm still having dinner with families who have lost children. I get very plugged in. I'm the guy who shows up, and I don't have a girlfriend. And the reason I don't have a girlfriend, let me tell you why. The reason I don't have a girlfriend is because I will drop everything.
Yeah.
I get a call. The child you're talking about, it was a girl, and she was in the intensive care unit. And they family wanted me to show up there. They wanted to have a conversation with me, and I dropped everything. And I've done that in the past when I've dated girls. I've got to go. And,
sure.
And that's just how I do it. I made a decision, like I said, to dedicate my entire life to helping children with cancer and their family. I didn't realize at the time how big that word is, entire.
Yeah.
But I'm a man of my word, and when I made that commitment, I live up to it. So I will drop everything to spend time with these children. If they call me, I've gone on searches. If they call me, I had a girl call me one time. She's in the hospital. She hadn't really eaten in days, and they were worried, and they were going to have to put a feeding tube in. And all of a sudden, for some reason, she was craving crab legs and crawfish.
Yeah,
so,
girl.
In the middle of winter, I've got to go out and try to find crawfish and crab legs. So I went on this crazy mission. It took me several hours, but eventually I found it, and I showed up with the crab legs and the crawfish.
I love that.
And she ate it, and she felt better. And I do stuff like that all the time. We do room makeovers for the kids. I'll do anything that they ask me to do without any questions. I'd buy them a pony. I keep threatening to buy one of them a pony, but I haven't found a parent willing to let me do that.
Buy the pony. Yeah. So this is amazing and beautiful and intense. How do you care for yourself when so much of your energy is for others? And what I'm hearing you say is that that's how you want it, that that gives you life. And I totally respect that. But at some point as a human being, it gets really hard. How do you take care of Tom?
Okay. So for me, and you sort of touched on it, but you're right as well. I mean, for me, my therapy, my self-care, my purpose, my conviction is by helping these kids. Right. So I get so much from it that sustains me, that motivates me, that carries me, but you're absolutely right. It gets heavy. And sometimes it gets really heavy. And I went through a period, I'll be honest with you, I went through a period a couple of years ago where it got really heavy. I had lost a bunch of kids in a row. I was going through the end of a personal relationship. I was having some financial troubles. My oldest daughter, Shannon, had been in a car wreck. It scared me quite a bit. So things got really, really heavy. So I do, to the best of my ability, I'm not afraid to speak to people if I need to reach out for outside help, if I need to talk to somebody about what I'm doing. I'm not too proud or too macho to do that. I do try to take care of myself physically. I work out. Like I said, I run 200-mile ultra marathons. But clearly I run a lot. Yeah. You know, I run a lot. I skydive, but probably the most satisfying, fulfilling thing for me is I go out and I see a lot of live music. There's something for me.
Love that.
There's something about going out, and I go by myself most of the time and just immersing, dropping myself in the middle of a crowd of people who are getting down to live music, and I just forget about life for a while. And I just, there's something about music that, I don't know how to explain it, but it really, really takes me outside of myself long enough to catch my breath. And I feel rejuvenated and invigorated by spending. So I go to a lot of concerts for that reason.
What's your favorite live band to go see?
Okay, so it's a very relative question. I just saw Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds a couple nights ago. One of the most amazing concerts I've ever seen. But I like the Grateful Dead. I'll also be known to go see Slayer or some punk rock. Like my musical taste is very eclectic. Yeah. I like something that moves me, something that gets inside of me and moves me and forces me to shake my butt and move my feet without me even consciously thinking about it.
Being
and
aware.
A lot of different music can do that for me. I do have my favorites. I like to go see different configurations of the Grateful Dead. I like J.J. Gray. I like this band called Lucero. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, one of the most amazing concerts I've ever been to. I saw Ozzy Osbourne. Yeah, I'll go see anything.
Yeah, I love live music. I've probably not been to as many live concerts as you have, but I've been to a lot of them, many, 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 and my musical tastes are wide and vast, from a folk group called the Weepies to U2 to hair bands to Bruno Mars. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm a song guy. Like, I like songs, and if a song speaks to me, whether it's the melody, whether it's the harmony, whether it's the lyrics, whether it's the beat, if it speaks to me, then I'll like it. And I'm not married to any one genre, and I don't like everything by everybody.
Right, yeah.
You know, but what I like, and I like what I like. And it's kind of like art. I mean, it is art. You know, I like what I like.
It is art, yeah. Tom, if you could tell Shayla anything, what would you say?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I went to a grief retreat a couple of years ago, and I was hesitant to go, and I went thinking that I was going to be able to help all these other families that had just recently lost their kids. But there was a guy that was facilitating a workshop, and he asked all of us that were attending the workshop to do an exercise. And he goes, I want you to write a letter and ask your deceased child questions. And what was really fascinating to me is the questions I asked were, are you proud of me? You know, have I done what you,
it's you okay, wanted me to,
what you wanted me to do? You know, have I made your life worth it? You know, and I asked a variety of questions like that. And then we passed it up to the front, and then, you know what he did? He walloped to me. He said, now I want you to write a letter that your daughter answering you back.
Wow.
Right. And so, the answers that I wrote back, cause my daughter was snarky. And so when I asked the question, are you proud of me? She's like, dude, what are you, stupid? What do you think? Yeah. You know, you've turned your whole life around. Like, you know, all you do, like, from the time you get up in the morning until the time you go to bed at night is try to find ways to help children with cancer and their families. Of course I'm proud. So it was really interesting. So, you know, the only thing that, I mean, if she were to appear, she would come haunt me whatever.
At night and scare the shit out of you.
Not at night.
She promised not at night. Okay.
Yeah, we got to have understanding, man. I'm sensitive. I'll lose my mind. You know, I would just ask her. I'd be like, are you proud of me? You know, have I done right by your life? And I would like to believe that answer is yes.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, like, I've done a lot. My foundation has done a lot of really good things, and we've touched a lot of lives. Probably I could point out 40, 50 amazing things, like right off the top of my head. But if I had only successfully done one of those things, my life would have been a success. You know what I mean? And I believe that with every ounce of my being. Like, it's just amazing.
Me too. The
stuff that I get to be a part of. I'm just glad to let me be a part of it, you know?
How can I help with stillbrave.org? How can my listeners be part of your organization and support you?
Okay. So, well, I mean, the obvious reason, we always need financial support.
Sure. You know,
a lot of what we do, we don't dedicate or donate any money to research. We're not that type of a foundation. All of our money is day to day in the trenches type stuff.
Yeah.
We help with gas cards, grocery cards, car repairs, rent, utilities. And sadly, we help to pay for way too many funerals. But I'll also do crazy stuff too. Like, I'll do whatever. I had a family, little boy, he's 18 now. He has a very poor prognosis, but he has a girlfriend. And, you know, he's running out of treatment options, but his girlfriend, they wanted to get married. And she said, I'm going to marry him. I don't care. But they couldn't really afford a wedding, and she was going to have to get fake flowers for her and her bridesmaid. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, no, no. So I went out and bought like $2,000 worth of flowers. I said, pick the, you know, most amazing dream bouquet that you can get, and I'll make it happen for you. And we did. We bought flowers for the wedding and for the table.
I love that. I'm actually involved in an organization called Wish Upon a Wedding, which my background for years, I was an event and wedding planner, and they grant wedding wishes to people with terminal illness, not just cancer, but yeah, for grown up. So I love that you did that.
Yeah, it was such a great opportunity. And you know what's funny is, like, I find myself, like, I was talking to one of the social workers, and I said, so cool how I get these opportunities. Like, these opportunities are presented to me, and I'm so excited and so honored to be able to do something. Like, that's my life. Like, that's my job, is helping people and making cool stuff happen. Like, how amazing, how great is that? You know,
pretty extraordinary.
Yeah. I mean, that's what, I mean, it's sad and there's heartbreak and it's tough. You know, a large part of my job is helping people, and it's people usually, you know, when I show up, they usually feel good, because I'm not a doctor. I'm not sticking them. I'm not poking them.
Right. Yeah.
It's an amazing life. But to answer your question, so obviously we always need financial support. There's plenty of opportunities if you go to stillbrave.org to donate. On our donate tab, we have a variety of different programs and ways to donate. If you're in the DC metro area, we always are putting on fundraisers and things like that. The race that I have coming up is a national fundraiser. We do it annually. It's a 200-mile race that I'm going to be running up Mount St. Helens Volcano this coming August. And I'm bringing a childhood cancer survivor with me, who's going to run the race with me. And I'm also I'm also bringing the nurse who treated not only my daughter, but Lauren, the childhood cancer survivor.
Oh, my gosh.
And we're dedicating each of the 200, it's actually 206 miles. We're dedicating each of the 206 miles to a different child who is either fighting cancer or has lost their battle to cancer. And what I do is I carry pictures of these children with me. And so every 20 miles, I'll stop and I'll pull their pictures out and I'll read their names out loud. And what I do is I tell the parents, I said, no matter what, as long as I'm alive, I'm not going to let your child be forgotten. And I really, in some cases, we rejuvenate a family whose child has passed away. Even if the outcome has been very positive, we then are able to honor that child at that mile. And so we dedicate each of the miles to a different child who's either fighting cancer, is in remission, or has lost their battle. And then we ask people to donate to each one of those miles. So when the race gets going, the website will be up and probably after the first of the year, you can go and you can read the stories and the bios of all these children, and you can donate $1, you can donate $5, you can donate, $100, $1,000, whatever you want, you know, $5 million.
Yeah, bring it off.
Whatever you want to these children. But it's a way to keep their memory alive. It's a way to raise awareness. It's a way, you know, to read the stories, to get plugged in. That make you feel good about what you're doing. And obviously we have a ton of volunteer opportunities here. There's a large hospital in Northern Virginia called Inova Children's Hospital. And my foundation funds the adolescent young adult program. And what we do is we give them a great deal of money every year to hire somebody to to help facilitate age-appropriate activities for the older kids. Because the younger kids will always get, like, Build-A-Bear comes in, Build-A-Bear.
Sure. Yeah.
The princesses show up, the cheesy magicians. So although I like the but if you're 16, 17 years old, the last thing you want to do is build
see
another
a
bear. Over the princesses. So we put on more age-appropriate activities. And so we're always, like, the concert that we're putting on funds that program. So we have volunteer opportunities that present themselves too. We have parties at the chemotherapy clinic all the time. We do luncheons and different activities, and sometimes we need volunteers for that. So there's hands-on volunteer opportunities. There's donating opportunities. We have several committees that you could join, our All-Star Sibling Committee. A lot of things that can be done locally, of course, but there's also things that can be done on a national level if you have access to the internet or something like that. So there's a ton of opportunities. I'm very approachable. My email address is tom.mitchell@stillbrave.org. I personally answer every email that comes to me. You know, I'm very approachable, very reachable. If you want to help, I'll find a way for you to help for sure.
That is awesome. Well, I want to help, so we can talk about that after we hang up, but I'm into it. I love the energy and the idea that you can go in and make life more enjoyable for these kids and their family when it is just not a pleasant time, and then beyond, right? If to stay in touch with family, your commitment is astounding. The way you honor your daughter, certainly her life has changed the lives of so many people through you, which is such a gift, which is beautiful. I would love to know then, given that there are some really difficult, hard things that you do, you said you hold children's hand when they're dying. And I so respect the ability to do that. That takes a special person to sit there and not have that crush you completely, that you can get up and do it again and help the next child. But also there have to be some wonderful things. So how do you celebrate the wins, the successes, the smiles and the funds raised and given? And how do you stop and give them honor and celebrate?
So as long as childhood cancer is prevalent in this country, and as long as children are suffering through these 30, 40, 50-year-old treatment protocols, and as long as we're losing the equivalent of 5 entire elementary schools to children annually to childhood cancer, I'm not celebrating shit. Okay? I'm not celebrating a damn thing. All right? I do feel good when a child smiles at me. It does touch my heart. It does make me feel good. I will sit back and shed a tear of joy. But I'm not celebrating anything. Until childhood cancer has been eradicated, until it becomes a chronic illness, much the way HIV has become, until this country, I could throw numbers and statistics at you that would mortify you, but Americans spend 20 times more money annually on potato chips than we do on childhood cancer research. We spend the same amount of money annually on Halloween costumes for our pets. That's a true story.
I'm not supposed to laugh at that because it's such a serious thing that you're saying.
Right, but it's a mortifying statistic, right? This is where we live. So I understand your question, and I don't want to sound aggressive and belligerent when I answer it, but I don't celebrate shit because children are still dying, and there's nothing to celebrate because even when children survive a childhood cancer, many of them are plagued. Most of them are plagued with chronic illness, chronic issues. Sometimes they get secondary cancers. Yeah. I mean, there's so much that the general public isn't aware of. And we're legitimately using 30, 40, in some cases, 50-year-old chemotherapy treatments on our children. And chemotherapy, I don't know if you know this or not, was originally derived from mustard gas, a chemical warfare.
I do know it's a deadly poison.
Yeah. I mean, so essentially what we're doing is we're euphemistically calling this poison medicine, but we're it's like treating our children with leeches. And until this country, this world wakes up and puts the time and the money and the effort into to finding better, less toxic, more accountable treatments, then I'm really not interested in celebrating too much.
Well, I can hear that, and I can honor that. But I hope that what I actually heard you say is that you sort of your self-care to me sounds a little bit like a personal celebration of being able to stay in this work.
Yeah, it's really hard work, you know, and the reason that I stay in it, even when it gets really, really heavy, is because I'm built for it. Because not everybody can, like you said, not everybody can go and hold a child's hand one time, you know, and I've done it countless times.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, sometimes depending on the diagnosis, I know what the outcome is going to be, you know, and I go in anyway.
Yeah.
And I do it over and over and over and over again because I'm built for it. And there are times when something amazing happens, like we'll get a large grant or,
yes,
you know, something really cool will happen. It's not even that it just, something washes over me and I have a moment where I'm with my daughter again.
Oh.
And that's maybe the celebration.
That's your celebration. That's a beautiful conclusion to that question. Thank you for sharing that with us. All right. So other than stillbrave.org, which I am just, all of my listeners need to go support, do it for me, do it for Tom and Shayla and all of these kids and their families, because this is incredible work. Other than that, and stillbrave.org will be our charity of the week when the show airs. But what other charitable organization would you say is your favorite to support?
So I guess, I mean, I'm going to say Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Yeah.
Because I see what they do, and I see the profound and amazing impact that these trips have for these children and their families. Not just children with cancer, but Make-A-Wish, you know, serves a vast array of diagnoses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing. I mean, I'm a big proponent of a lot of other charitable organizations as well. And I advocate in a lot of different other areas outside of the childhood cancer realm. And I mean, I don't want to turn this into a political conversation.
No, I'm pretty sure we fight the same fights.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I definitely am about equality and across the board and a lot of other things too. But you know, the short answer is, the quick answer would be the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Awesome.
Outside of Still Brave. Obviously, I want you to give all your money to Still Brave.
We did.
Your charity dollars to Still Brave. But I do believe in the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and I work closely with a lot of them, and they're wonderful people. And they, you know, they made my daughter, you know, her dream was to swim with the dolphins. And, you know, a couple of months before she passed away, they made that dream happen for her to send us to Hawaii so she could swim with the dolphins. And I don't think I've ever seen her as happy as she was that day.
I love that.
Amazing.
Yeah, I love that. Tom, will you share your three words with us one last time?
Sure. My three words are empathy, brave, and authentic.
Yeah, those words, they fit. They work really beautifully for you. Sometimes I ask that question and then we get to sort of dig in as to why, but
I think we covered that, right?
I think we covered that.
Right.
Yeah. This has been really a lovely way to spend 45 minutes. I am so grateful for your sharing your story, but the gifts of your daughter and the inspiration that she has instilled in you and what you're doing, what you're out there reminding us all. I love your honesty with what you thought Brave was and what you now believe Brave to be, because that's very in line with what I believe and why I do this show. We are all still scared about whatever it is all the time. We just do it anyway.
Yep. I would like to share one last thing with you if I could.
Yes, please.
You know, before my daughter passed away, a couple of days before she passed away, I came home from a short trip to the pharmacy and I found her. She had tried to get up and use the bathroom and she had fallen in the bathroom and she couldn't get up and she was tangled in her oxygen lines and, you know, she had an accident.
Oh my God.
And I found her that way and she was crying and I picked her up and I cleaned her up and I washed her. And it was an embarrassing time for both of us. I mean, she was a teenager. It was a tough time. And for this to happen to her was difficult. And I carried her into the bed and I laid her down and she looked at me and she said, "I'm still brave, right, Dad? Still brave, right?"
Wow.
And it dawned on me at that moment, you know, all those talks we've been having about staying brave and all of that, this whole time, Heather, she hadn't been staying brave for herself. Nah, man, she's been staying brave for me.
Yeah.
That's still brave.
And you had been staying brave for her.
Yeah. And that's still brave. That's what my foundation is.
Yeah. Well, usually I say some things at the end of the show, and I'm going to not, because that's still brave. Tom, thank you for being here. Listeners, thank you for being here. I sign off every show by saying, this is Heather Vicker reminding you to choose bravely. So just stay brave. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather.
All right.
You've been listening to The Brave Files, stories of people living courageously. Visit us at thebravefilespodcast.com to learn more about the show, find our show notes, and access full episode transcripts. And we'd love to know what you think of the show. We invite you to connect with us via Instagram and send a DM. You'll find us at The Brave Files Podcast on Instagram. Our music was created and produced in a custom collaboration with Matt Lewis from ML Creative Consulting, a boutique firm dedicated to helping clients identify their unique sound and amplify their brand with custom-delivered soundtracks. Special thanks to everyone on Team Brave, from our audio engineer to our producers, associate producers, copy editors, writers, and support team. The show wouldn't exist without them, and we are eternally grateful. I'm your host and executive producer, Heather Vickery. Thanks for tuning in.